I'm going to try to talk loud enough for everybody. Can everybody hear me? Okay, my name is James. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Anne, for the introduction. Almost cried a little bit. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to start by saying that because today I had a pretty wild day. It was just a wild day today. And everything kind of, my life hit the fan at about 4 p.m. today. And luckily I have, you know, this program and a sponsor who I can call and kind of talk me off the ledge. And AA has a funny way of just putting you in a position to be of service when your life is like falling apart, essentially. I mean, my life's not falling apart, but it was a wild day. Yeah, my sobriety date is April 1st, 2014. It was a wild April Fool's Day. So I guess what it was like, you know, growing up, life was kind of, I lived like a pretty modest life growing up. I was kind of picked on in elementary school. I was the kid on, you know, the school lunch deal, you know, where you couldn't really afford school lunches. So I kind of got made fun of for that. And, I had really messed up teeth. I actually, thank God for braces, but I had these two teeth that were really crooked. And so I got made fun of a lot in like, elementary school. And, that kind of pushed me out. I started hanging out with some questionable characters, and now I say third grade, and truly that's kind of when I turned into a hellion. I went to Still Elementary School. I actually set the bathroom on fire in third grade. Me and a couple friends stole some lighters and some cigarettes. This was back when cigarettes didn't used to be behind the counter, and we were stealing cigarettes and lighters for the older kids in the neighborhood, and we decided to take them to school and set the toilet paper on fire. And, it didn't go well. So I got suspended for 30 days. I had to have the fire safety crew come pick me up from my house every day. And I had to ride around with them. And I had to do these little fire safety houses in this little workbook. And I got my butt whooped. But it really didn't. It didn't really mean much to me because I just continuously just kept acting out. And I got in a lot of trouble early on. And, you know, I remember when I was in fifth grade, you know, I used to get in trouble and I'd come home and my dad would be like, you know, the routine. And so he used to just whip me with a belt. And I remember there was one time in fifth grade I came home and I brought pornographic magazines to school. And I knew it was coming, you know. So I walked in, and my parents kind of already knew the deal. I just was like, all right, let's go. My mom was like, you know, what the hell? Like, what's wrong with this kid? So they, you know, showed me ink blotters and all this stuff at school. And they just couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And then my life kind of continued like that. So I had my first drink. I believe I was in either like fifth or sixth grade. It was a kid who lived behind my parents and they had all this property and this lake and we used to go down there and just kind of just tear it up. And I remember it was the summer and, he was a year older than me. And, he was like, man, I got a great idea. My parents have, you know, some alcohol in the cabinet. Let's make it happen. So he grabs this handle of vodka, and we grab these glasses. They're like, you know, they're like lake kind of glasses. And he just, he fills it like all the way up with vodka and like a splash of orange juice. And he's like, yeah, I saw my parents. This is like what my parents do. And so I was like, all right, cool. So I took a sip, and it tasted like complete doo-doo. And he was like, no, dude, you just chug it. Like, you just chug it. And so I was like, okay. So I chugged it. We went out onto they had this lake, and we went out onto this paddle boat. And I remember he had like this, apparently it was like a really expensive fishing rod, but he was just like drunk, like hanging over the side. And he kept swinging the rod and whipping me with the string. And I was like, dude, if you hit me with that, damn string one more time. I'm going to take the pole. I'm going to break it over your head and we'll throw it in the lake. Well, I did exactly that. And his parents got really pissed about the rod. And the way they found out is because his little brother went inside and dressed in full scuba gear to try to go into the lake to find the rod. And so that looks just kind of odd, you know. Never found the rod. I got in trouble. My parents found out, you know. It was what it was. But that was kind of my introduction to alcohol, and I loved it. I mean, I really loved it. My dad was a PBR guy. And so I used to steal the PBRs out of the fridge, and I would just like take like one or two and I'd drink them, and you know, I wouldn't get like super wasted, but, he started to find out about that, and, that didn't go very well. And then, I kind of chilled out a little bit. I ended up going to a new middle school with like all new people. Had a bowl cut, had a blonde bowl cut. I had braces. My teeth were starting to straighten out. And this was like Backstreet Boys craze. And so, a lot of people used to say I looked like one of the Backstreet Boys. So I like walking in this new school and like, it's attention, you know, I switched up everything. I started to dress different. I used to be like a little skater kid, wearing like Airwalks and, what are they, JNCOs, I think, JNCO jeans. So I completely switched up, and it was partly because, you know, I really wanted to be a part of what was going on there, and it was tough. I went to a whole new school, all new people. I didn't really know anybody, so I had to figure out the best way to fit in. And so I did. And so I changed up everything. I chilled out for a little bit. And then this leafy green substance came into my view. And I was in eighth grade, and I ended up getting some and bringing it home, and I rolled like a little joint. And my parents had like this single level house, and it was like, this was house phones, like, you know, used to be on the house phone, like talk to girls all night. And I walk outside, I have this joint rolled, and I sit underneath the window. Well, it's one of those windows that opens from, like, it comes down from the top too. So I didn't really think the window was open. And so I just spark up the joint. I'm just smoking the joint. And my mom picks up the phone because she knew I was on the phone. And it was not pretty. It was pretty ugly. The whole house smelled like, you know, weed. I was kind of, I just never really cared, you know? It was just like consequences didn't really matter. And I was always chasing like the next thing, you know? It was like, you know, I'd do something for a little while and then, you know, I wouldn't be good enough. And then, you know, I'd have to mix other things with alcohol. And I was introduced to, you know, pills in high school and I got pretty rough on that. But I would say, honestly, the worst thing that ever happened to me in high school, was I took a big turn, right? In middle school, I was kind of like this preppy kid. And then I got to high school and I wanted to be like, you know, this thugged out gangster, you know, that was kind of my deal. That took me down a really wicked path. I got arrested my first time in high school. We were drinking one night and we went over to this girl's house and we were going to like sneak in over there. Well, we showed up and she wasn't home. So what did we do? We thought it would be a great idea to like break in the house and like steal things. And we did just that. And I found a credit card and I stole the credit card, and then I went to TJ Maxx and tried to buy some clothes with it. Well, the charge got declined, and so immediately I freaked out, and I had my mom's credit card, and I was like, oh, here, no, sorry, wrong card, and swiped it. So I caught my first felony when I was, like, 17 for financial transaction card fraud, and that kind of started my deal with going to jail and really starting to go down. I got a DUI. My first DUI I got, I was on 575 and, there was some pills involved, but I ended up cutting off a police officer getting off on the 575 Bell's Ferry exit. You know, it's kind of wicked, that lane right there. So I cut him off. He comes up to the car. "You been drinking?" "Oh, no, I've been drinking." And I remember watching the tape afterwards, but, I refused everything. And, they're like, "All right, well, your license is going to be suspended. You apply for this thing, whatever." And I was kind of a real dickhead. And so I went to jail, bonded out. Well, about a month later, I went to this bar. It was the Sidelines on Roswell Road. So I go there, and I'm just drinking like Grateful Deads or something. I can't remember what it was. It's like all these liquors mixed in one, and I was just trashed. And there was a guy there, and he was doing cocaine, and I happened to like a little bit of cocaine. And I asked him for some cocaine. He's like, "Yeah, we'll go get it." Well, anyway, some weird stuff happened. He like tried to make a move on me, and and so I was like, "All right." I was like, "Well, hey," and I was under 21 at the time, I think, or I might have been like right at 21. It was 2006. So I had him go into this gas station. I was like, "Hey, just go get some more alcohol. You know, I don't have an ID." And he's like, "All right, cool." Well, he gets out. Now, take in mind, this is the weird part of the story, is he's on foot, right? And I'm at, if anybody's familiar with this area, I'm on Roswell Road. So he gets out of the car. I bolt. I just take off. And so I was on 41, and I was going like 120 miles an hour all the way down 41. And I made it all the way to Mac Dobbs Road, if anybody's familiar where that is. And I end up calling a friend of mine, and I'm like, "This guy's chasing me. Like, this is wicked." And he's like, "Really?" And like, nobody's chasing me, but I'm like, you know, I'm tripping out. And I'm like, "Man, this guy's chasing me." So I'm flying down Mac Dobbs Road, and I come up on this hill, and you know, I'm coming up this way. The car lifts off the ground and flips. And so the car flipped like 7 or 8 times. I got ejected from the vehicle, and I remember I woke up on the sidewalk. I was almost to Stilesboro Road. It was the neighborhood right there, and there's this woman standing there. And I mean, you gotta understand, I did a lot of drugs, so my mind's kind of screwy. But I swear there was a woman there, and she had like a house phone, and she was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like bleeding everywhere, and I just got up and I ran, right? And then I end up running this girl that. Driving down the road, she's like, "What the hell's going on? Bleeding everywhere." I was like, "I need to call my mom." So I call my mom, show up anyway. Come to find out that the lawyer didn't put in for my thing. So suspended license, DUI, all within, like, I had 2 DUIs, suspended license, leaving the scene of an accident, all within like a month's time. So I went to court, and I got a really good lawyer, and I got off. Nothing happened. And so I'm like, okay, so this is how this works, right? You get in all this trouble, you just get the right lawyer, you get out of everything. That's not how it works, actually. And I found out kind of the hard way. So fast forward a little bit, I got into selling drugs. And I ended up getting hooked up with some of the wrong people, and they kind of sold me this idea that it would just be a great idea to, you know, like make fake passports and go into other countries and send drugs through the mail. And I was like, "Man, that sounds like a great idea," you know. And August. It was August of 2008. My world literally crashed. My mom. So prior to that, I ended up getting robbed, and some people came in dressed like the police and duct taped us and hog tied us and everything. And so there was a white car that was apparently outside my apartment at the time. I was living in this apartment. Well, I went back to my parents' house. My mom calls me. She's like, "Hey, there's this white car sitting up the street from the house. And I was crazy, right? So I probably wouldn't do nothing, but I was crazy. I'd do some wild shit, but not really super harm anybody. But so I raced home, and I went inside, and I grabbed a pistol, and I walked outside. I started shooting it in the air. And so I thought these were some sketchy people, but these were the police, right? And they were, yeah. So they were coming to get me, and I didn't know that at the time. I drove this 1996 Lincoln Town Car that was slammed to the ground, and it was just tinted like 5% tint all the way around. And so I get in the car to go chase them. And, like, so my parents' neighborhood is kind of like just a grid, you know. So it's like you come down these streets, and then these connect, and then you go out, and the main road is, like, Castile Road. So I pull out on Castile Road, and I'm like, you know, I see all these cops. They're swarming. And I'm like, oh, shit, they're probably going to my mom's house because they think the firearm discharged. And so they're probably just going there. So if I just pull in this neighborhood and just kind of lean the seat back and hide, I'll be okay. But that was not the case. They were coming for me. So, you know, I pull in, I park, and they've got like AR-15s, and there's like a freaking tank that pulls up, and it's like all these people just for me, just for little old me. And I'm like, what in the hell is going on? And, lo and behold, I finally make it to the Cobb County jail, after being in a couple different precincts around Cobb County. And I see a bunch of my friends, like a lot of friends. And I'm like, well, this is awkward. How are we all here? So I go to the counter, and they're like, well, you don't have a bond. You're being charged with violation of the Georgia RICO Act, trafficking cocaine, which I'm like, cocaine, trafficking. Use of telecommunications to commit a felony. It was a laundry list of things. And I was like, oh, shit. You know, I don't think I can get out of this, because they're like, you don't have a bond. And I was like, damn it. So I just sat down for a little while. I eventually actually ended up getting a bond. You know, I got out. I was like, I'm going to do this the right way. Like, I'm going to rock it. And I didn't. The first thing I did the day I got out is I called a friend of mine, and I'm like, hey, man, come over. Let's get wasted. And, you know, he shows up, you know, hope this doesn't offend anybody. He shows up with some heroin. And so then I just took off. Went down this really wicked path, and full of isolation and everything. And, you know, March, I knew I was getting ready to get indicted on all my charges, because I had a lawyer at the time. He told me that. So March of 2011, I decided I was going to go check into Ridgeview. And I did. I went and checked into Ridgeview, and I did the deal. I really did the deal. I did the deal for 10, 11 months. I probably owe an immense AA because I picked up a year chip and I was already getting high, but, you know, that's something for a different day. But I did well. I really thought I wanted to be sober. I chased a lot of women in AA at that time. You know, I was kind of in this relationship with like four or five different women. I show up to a meeting and they're all there. And I'm like, oh, shit. So, yeah, not good. So I did what James always does, and I got scared and I ran. And immediately, I mean, like literally, I left, picked up the phone, like didn't skip a beat. Hey, I'm coming, you know. And did the whole deal, and went back down that path again. Got kicked out. I was at the sober living called Hope Homes at the time. And I remember they came in. They're like, ah, dude, you failed your drug test. I'm like, what? Me? What? Are you serious? And I tried to play off this whole thing. They're like, dude, come on. Gig's up, man. And so they kicked me out. And ran for like a good 2 months. And then I wanted to get sober again. I wanted to be sober. I was miserable. I was about ready to blow my brains out. So I went back to treatment. I went to hospital detox, I think it was. It was like a hospital detox, and they had me hooked up to all these IVs, and they let you have your phone in there, which is kind of weird. And so I get a text from a guy, and he's like, "Hey, man, I got some good stuff." And so I just yank out all these freaking IVs, and I just walk out. And I'm driving home. I'm just blasted. I basically, like, OD'd in this parking lot. I woke up, like, 6 hours later. And I'm driving home all over the road, and somebody calls the cops and is like, "Hey, this guy's – somebody just get this guy off the road, man. He's about to kill some people." And so that happened. And went back to jail for a little while, and because I was on probation, and spent a little time in jail, and I got out, and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm gonna, God, by God, I'm doing it this time. Like, man, I'm tired of this. I'm over it." And I tried drinking on the weekends. Like, we were just gonna drink on the weekends. We're gonna have a couple beers on the weekends, and it was all gonna be cool. The first 2 weekends, I did it. You know, had like a couple beers, put it down, no big deal. I was like, man, I'm headstrong. You know, my will is gonna carry me through this time. And I'm like, man, I figured it out. I can drink. This is great news. I don't have to do drugs anymore. I can just drink. I can drink normally. and then the third weekend, it got real weird. Started drinking Sailor Jerry's and, you know, straight, I was drink like a fifth of Sailor Jerry's, and I had some friends over, and I come downstairs, and one of my good friends is sleeping with my girlfriend on the couch. You know, they're doing the deal, and I'm like, "What is going on?" And so I, you know, spiraled out of control again. You know, that was, you know, it's like, man, everybody just keeps coming in and screwing this up. If people would just do what I need them to do, and if they would just fall in line, I could do this like a normal person. That kind of went on for a while. Bad decisions, couple overdoses, car accidents, DUIs, good amount of time in jail. So the day I got sober, it was April 1st. So the day before that, I got into a little weird situation, and, I was driving down the road, and my car was wrecked. I had this Toyota Camry at the time. The trunk is busted. It's wide open. And, I got pulled over, and I knew damn good and well that the house I just came from was being watched, and I knew it was just not going to end good. Based on everything that happened prior to the day. And the cop comes to my window, and he's like, "Hey, Mr. May." And I'm like, "Hi, you already knew it was me. You didn't even get my license yet." And he's like, "Yeah, man, why don't you go ahead and step out of the car, man? Let's just talk." And the first thing that came to my head was, "I need help." And I told that cop I need help, and he... no bullshit. He looked at me. He's like, "I know you do, man." He's like, "Come on." And so we step back, and they kind of know me a little bit. That so it was the MCS that pulled me over. And he's like, "Yeah, man, what's going on?" I'm like, "Man, I can't stop shooting heroin, cocaine." He's like, "All right." He's like, "Well, you know you're going to jail, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I kind of knew that." He was like, "Yeah, but it's gonna be all right, man." And I was like, "Okay, good. That's good. That makes me feel better." So I went to jail, they actually found some paraphernalia in my car. I didn't expect all that to happen and catch new felony charges while I'm already on felony probation. But I sat in jail for about almost seven months. And I ended up going to court. The stars literally aligned. I don't know how. I went to this place called the Timothy House in Jasper. If anybody knows about the Timothy House, it's not the greatest. And it was it's a good dose of humility for me. a couple double wide trailers in the middle of the woods. You got like 16 people. It's like 40, 50 people total. Each house has like 16, 20 people. They make you work. They make you skin deer. You work for free. It's wild, but it was what I needed. The reason I love Alcoholics Anonymous so much is, so there, every Sunday you get visitation. I work in the treatment industry, and, the first thing I always hear people say, I gotta see my family. I gotta get visitation. I gotta do this. I gotta do that. And I was that guy. That was my thing. You know, I gotta visit all these people. I gotta make amends. I gotta do all this stuff before I even start the steps. And, the first thing, so I got there on a Thursday. I got there on October 9th. It was a Thursday. And my visitation was Sunday. And so my mom came and picked me up, and I was like, hey, listen, like, I'm not trying to be a dick, but take me to the Howe place. You know, like, I don't really want to visit. I know I've been locked up for a little while. It's okay. Y'all could have came visit me while I was locked up, but I got to do this. So I went to the Howe place. It was the Sunday meeting at 4 p.m. That's kind of where I got started. And I walked in, and nobody really said anything to me. And after me, this guy came up to me, and he's like, hey, man, I've never seen you around here before. And I'm like, oh, man, thank God. And he was this guy, and he's like, yeah, man, I work for Lockheed, and I'm a DJ, and I'm blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, this is great. I got a sponsor. He's going to get me a job at Lockheed, and he's going to teach me how to DJ, and, like, this is what it's about. And that's not what happened. My chances of getting a job at Lockheed are probably shot. He sat down with me, and every Sunday that's what we did. And instead of seeing my family, I got to work. I started working the steps. I hated God, honestly, when I first came in, because I truly, honestly prayed God to not let me wake up. And I had this strong resentment against God because somehow or another, no matter how much I did, no matter, you know, what car I wrecked, no matter what situation I was in, I always made it out. And I was kind of tired of living that way. And I really wanted God to take me out because I was just suffering. It was just ugly, you know? But God had a different idea, a different plan for me, and I'm grateful that He did, because it brought me back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's wild, man. Whenever you kind of start to dive in it, and you've been trying to prove this damn thing wrong for the longest time. You know, I tried to prove AA wrong, that this shit didn't work. Excuse my language, but. When I really sat down and started working the steps and going through it and understanding what the steps meant, understanding what the book meant, it changed my whole perception on life. I used to think about life a lot differently. I used to want to argue with you. I used to want to get mad at everything. I wanted to blame everything on everybody. My sponsor used to tell me, he's like, man, when you can come to the realization that, like, pretty much everything is your fault, you'll be all right. And I was like, well, nah, this isn't my fault. This isn't my fault. And lo and behold, a lot of it's my fault. I hopped into the work, went through 1, 2, and 3, started to not have an issue with the whole thing, and... I heard this speaker one time, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God. And, he explains in this thing, he says, the opposite of decision is incision, right? So decision means you cut everything out. Like, you literally cut everything out. Like, you know, when you're in school and you cut out these things, you cut out all these things, like, you've literally cut everything out. And now you're at the last thing that you haven't really cut out. And that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I tried to cut it out. But somehow or another, I kept showing up here. And that made a lot of sense to me, because I used to think it was, I had to sit and stand in a circle and sing Kumbaya and pray and pull out chakras and everything else. But it wasn't anything like that, man. I literally wake up every day, I ask God for help, and somehow or another He helps me. And that's just how it works. And started to go through, step four, and started to realize that I was pretty much wrong about everything that's happened to me in my life. I thought everything was everybody else's fault. I blamed it. And I used to blame it on my parents. They didn't make enough money, or, this situation happened, or God, put me in this situation, or, I don't have this girl, or I can't get this job. It was like always my sobriety had terms, if things don't go this way, then screw everything. I'm just going to go and act out. Started to realize that I was a scared little man, full of fear, full of insecurity. I hate when somebody messes with my money. When my things are in jeopardy, I tend to act out real good. And I started to kind of understand that it's okay to be afraid. I lost my best friend, drugs and alcohol. The only thing that ever worked for me, that was my solution to every single problem. The only problem is it stopped working. And the good thing about it is God started working. And God started to kind of work in my life, and he helped me clean up a lot of things. Helped me understand that, when it talks about practicing these principles in all of our affairs, it's important to know what those principles are, because you can't practice if you don't know. And I never knew what they were, and I didn't understand a lot of things about this program. I didn't understand that, in order for this to work, faith has to work 24 hours a day. But it's about how active you are, I went to meetings for a long time. I'd be like I'd probably walk in late, pop into the meeting, be the first one out the door every time. And I wondered why it didn't work for me. I used to always say, well, AA doesn't work. It didn't work for me. And lo and behold, I wasn't really a member of AA. I was a meeting maker. And I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but I don't believe in the meeting makers make it, personally. Now, that's a personal opinion of mine, and that's okay. But if I would have continued to think like that, I would have died. And I've seen a lot of people come in and just go to meetings and not be active, and a lot of those people have died, and a lot of those people are very close to me. But the solution is in here. The solution is in here. Look at everybody in here. All the people, 30, 50. Hell, when I was at the convention, I think it was somebody like 69 years sober. It's a long damn time. Something's got to be working, I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, truly. I met some of my best friends. I think everybody who was in my... I recently just got married. And everybody in my party, except for one guy who I've known since I was a kid, he is sober now. But I met them in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My photographer, I met him in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody in my life is a member. And I surround myself with those people because I need those people more than ever. No matter if I got 10 years sober, 15, 20, 5, I need them. Just as much as I needed them the day I walked in here, I need them even more today. It keeps me centered. My sponsor, he keeps me centered. There's a lot of things I have to do that I really don't like to do. And I hate, but it's just part of the deal, And when I dig in, I those promises they read, fear of people and of economic insecurity. Man, God Almighty, that was me. And now it's not so bad. It went away. And that's because I worked the nice stuff. I made some hard amends. And some of those amends really opened up some new relationships. And that's a beautiful thing. But the most beautiful thing about it is I'm not afraid of people anymore. I don't have to hide. I don't have to hide in AA. I don't have to hide at work. I can literally be who I am. I can be out here in the world, and I can have a good life. I can just be an average guy, be an average member of AA. I can be average anywhere. I don't have to be this you know, look at me all the time. And that's a beautiful thing, because I feel comfortable. AA is my home. It's been my home for a while, and it's truly a really big honor to tell my story here. Because when I got out of the Timothy house, I made this place my home group. And I stopped coming for a little while. I work in the treatment field, and I thought that was good enough. You know, I thought, oh, I work with these people all day. You know, I help people get sober. That's good enough. That keeps me spiritually connected. And Jesus Christ, that like 3 years sober, I'm like sitting at home, I'm like ready to freaking jump off the roof. You know, I stopped making time for AA, and I did that for about 9 months. And thank God I was still connected a little bit to the program, that I didn't, you know, take off again. Because if I didn't make it back here, if I didn't start coming back and rearrange my life to work with AA, man, I hate to say it, but I probably wouldn't be standing up here right now. You know, it's probably somewhere else I'd have been. And that proved to me how vital Alcoholics Anonymous is to me. You know, these meetings, showing up, introducing myself to people. You know, you see somebody you don't know, you introduce yourself to them. You know, the service aspect of AA is the most important one for me, because it keeps me close. You know, it keeps me close, and I can't harp enough on being active in AA. You know, if you got a home group, go to it. You know, and I'm not the best. I was at group conscience last week, but you know, I've struggled, man. I mean, to say it's just been a breeze would not be accurate. But man, staying close has helped me through it. You know, these past couple of years have probably been some of the hardest years of my life, and thank God for the people in this room, because you know, it really makes me feel important and loved. I remember I wasn't here for a little while, and I got a text from Jen. Jen was like, hey, are you okay? And I was like, man. And to be honest and to be truthful, that's what brought me back. You know, I was too busy. Work became priority. And I was close to jumping off, and then God showing up again. Get a text message, hey, how are you? I haven't seen you in a while. And I think I lied to you. It was like, oh, yeah, this work's crazy or whatever. But but anyway, man, God is amazing. I'm gonna leave with this last little story, and then I'm gonna shut it down. About almost 4 years ago, I had I was in church one day, and I'm not gonna start preaching to y'all. Don't worry. But the pastor was talking about, you know, anything that has a strangle on your heart from your past will prevent you from, you know, experiencing the blessings of your future. And I was like, man, you know, what does that mean? You know, and I thought I was like a great member of AA at the time. And I was like, no, I mean, I made all these amends. I did all this. Like, it couldn't be anything else. And so I had this one thing from my past. And it was my shoe collection. I used to collect Jordans. And I had a pretty hefty collection. And I remember I went home one day, and I used to have this little back porch off my house, and I'd sit out there, and I'd just sit quiet, and you know, just all these thoughts would run through my head, and something came to me. It was like, sell your shoe collection. And I was like, oof, I don't know. I was like, I don't know, God. That sounds a little sketchy. But I sold it. I sold every last, I sold all of them but one pair, and I actually ended up giving those to a guy. And with that, I started a recovery program, and it's grown, and it's blossomed, and I'm humbled and honored to have, you know, people that I get to spend time with every day. And it is a job for me, but You know, it's amazing. I've had the opportunity to see a lot of people recover. And that, man, that just, it almost, I love that, man, because there's a lot of young people out here dying. I mean, it's no secret. It's ugly out there. And when you see somebody come in and they just have that look on their face and they're ready to get going, man, it just fires you up. And it's the most amazing thing in the world. And I couldn't be more blessed to be a part of that and to be a part of those people's stories. And a couple of those people have come back into my life as of recent. And it means a lot, you know. It means a lot to see them want this, because I know what that's like, and I've been there. And I'm glad some of them are here tonight. I'm not going to point them out, but, you know, I love those people, man. I love everybody in this room. Like I said, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, and I truly wouldn't have anything. I wouldn't have anything. I wouldn't have a wife. I wouldn't have a life. I wouldn't have friends. I wouldn't have a family if it weren't for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank you for letting me speak tonight, because, you know, I always wanted to tell my story at my home group, and I was like, I don't know, man. They might think differently of me. So, that's what I got, man. I really appreciate y'all letting me get up here and talk to y'all. Thank you.